Track session number 19094, Reel 1.
Major Patterson, Reel 1, where were you born, please?
I was born in Elba, Clackmannanshire, Scotland.
How do you spell Elba?
Elba.
Alva.
Elba. A-L-V-A.
Which year was this?
1920.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Alva?
Yes, I attended Alva Academy.
How old were you when you finished there?
I left school when I was 14, joined the army when I was 17.
Now, let's just jump ahead of your early career, right up to the early 50s,
yes.
When I think you were an NCO with the Black Watch.
I was a warrant officer with the Black Watch in 1952 when we went to Korea.
Can you tell me about the circumstances about getting your posting to Korea that you remember?
We were in Germany at a place called Buxtehude, which is not very far from Hamburg. We had come to that station from Berlin. And in early 1952, we were warned that we would be going to Korea. And you normally served in Korea for a summer and a winter. And from there, we went back to Scotland to Crail, which is a naval air station in Fife. And we mustered there and were kitted out to go to Korea.
How did you feel when you heard that you were due to be posted to Korea?
Well, we were all very elated indeed. We thought this was a great thing.
Why was that?
Well, we had been in Germany, we had been in Berlin for nearly 18 months, and it's very much flying the flag, a lot of hard work. Buxtehude wasn't a particularly good station, and we really wanted to either get home or go somewhere else. I think that was we're glad to get away from that station.
What was the problem with Buxtehude?
Well, I say there was a lot of training there, but there wasn't a great deal of a sort of things for the jocks themselves. It was a funny sort of town. A lot of the German refugees from after the war had settled there. So it was a bit of a peculiar town, put it that way.
And was this the 1st Battalion of the Black Watch?
1st Battalion of the Black Watch. The 1st Battalion had been to Buxtehude towards the end of the last war during the campaign in Northwest Europe that passed through Buxtehude.
You say you were a warrant officer
warrant
with the battalion.
Yes.
What was your actual job with the battalion?
Company Sergeant Major of Alpha Company.
What preparations did you and your comrades have to make for going out there?
What do you mean with families? Or
anything at all?
Again, going there, it's a lot of our families had to go into married quarters up north, just outside Aberdeen. The remainder either had to find their own accommodation, private accommodation, or go and live with relatives. We were fortunate that we managed to get a flat in Crail, which is the village nearest to the camp we went in for, where we were mustered in Fife. So that was all right as far as we were concerned. So my daughter went to school there, and my wife lived in quite a nice flat we had there.
Can you tell me about going out to Korea, please?
Yes, we and trained at Crail, and went down to Southampton, and what immediately struck me when we got down there, that it brought back a lot of memories of the before the war, when we went to the Middle East. We went by a troop ship as well, but the troop ship we went on to go to Korea was one of the German strength through joy ships, which was excellent accommodation. There was no hammocks or nothing like that. It was all cabins and good accommodation. Whereas the old, the first time before the war, going to the Middle East, we were going to Egypt, but the dreadful old troop ships, all crammed in their hammocks. You had to roll them up in the morning, put them up in the evening, and during the night, if you had to get up to go anywhere, it was bump, bump, bump all the way along through the... it was very unpleasant. And we had a very bad storm going to Egypt, which didn't help. So this lovely ship and that, and when we got aboard, it really was quite a... We had a really lovely time there going out to Korea. It was good. Yeah. Excellent food, lots of entertainment. We'd managed to do a lot of training on board ship, a lot of sports, or sporting activity, as much as you can do on board ship.
Do you remember the name of the ship?
The Orwell.
Any incidents that happened on the voyage out?
Well, not any incidents, no. We did stop at the usual places going to the Far East. That is Gibraltar, Malta, Cyprus, Colombo, Singapore, Hong Kong, and then on to Busan. During the journey, ship's inspections were carried out by the ship's captain. To start off with, it wasn't as good as what he would like, so that was soon put to right. And after a slightly awkward start, as far as that went, he became very, very friendly towards the regiment, and he was really first class with us. And he enjoyed us being with him towards the latter end. So that was quite an exciting journey, especially for the young chaps that hadn't been overseas before. And there were a lot of them, because there were a lot of young soldiers, a lot of national service. Most of the regular officers and the warrant officers and a number of the sergeants, not them all, had all seen active service before in the war. The remainder of the junior NCOs and jocks and that, they were all very young soldiers, and as I say, a lot of national service. So they seeing all these sights and what have you, and that, they were very taken with that, because the food was good on board ship, and I say the entertainment was excellent. And at many of these ports of call, they were allowed to go ashore, for a few hours. And so they thoroughly enjoyed that.
So you went straight into Busan?
We went to Busan, and we were met on the dockside by the quayside by an American band playing the St. Louis Blues. Remember that? Marching up and down, welcoming us.
What were your first impressions of Korea?
You smelt Korea many miles out from the south, long before you got to it. It was a very dirty old place. But mind you, they'd gone through a lot. The war had been come down that far originally, before the 38th Battle was established. And they'd had a lot of bombing and what have you, but there was this dreadful fishy smell about the place and that, so we were very glad to entrain and, you know, go up to the concentration area.
What was the train journey like?
That was a bit hairy because the leaving the station, they had this very old bridge, you know, where the train had to cross over. And it didn't at all look very safe, but anyway, nothing happened. We got there, but it looked a wee bit dicey. And we got to the concentration area and detrained and what have you and that, and got prepared then for to do about a week or two, 3 weeks, I think it was, training prior to going into the line, acclimatisation and training.
What did that involve?
Well, the usual exercises and what have you, and that, and again, getting rid of the, you know, the softest of the journey on ship, which was nearly a month, and generally getting, you know, settled in, and especially the young soldiers and that, and getting them to realise that they, you know, this was a very, very serious affair, because a lot of them they were still in the say attitude, you know, that they hadn't seen anything, wanted to get up to the front and that. Well, you just can't do that without knowing what's how to conduct yourself and look after yourself. And again, with the junior NCOs, that they, I would have liked to have seen them a bit better than what they were. They should have asserted themselves a bit more.
Why do you think they didn't assert?
Well, because they were very young, and although they might have been very good in barracks, that when it came to, you know, looking after them in the field, and especially when you get into the line, when they would be responsible for their own sections in the trench and dugouts and things like that, and you know, when things started to happen, they had a very serious job on their hand. So you've got to be a strong character, you know, to keep control of youngsters, or not even youngsters, but the men under your immediate command, small command as it may be. But again, that they rectified itself as time went by, and they soon began to realise that how to get the best out of the troops. And that was the amazing thing about the jocks. All the way through the whole campaign, it was the way they went about things. And the cheerfulness of them was amazing. Quite amazing. And, they just seemed to take all the knocks. And every time we moved into a new position, we always seemed to have a tremendous amount of work to be done. And we would never be allowed to leave a position without it being in absolutely, you know, tip-top condition to the for the unit that was taking over from us. This didn't always happen with units that we took over from, so that the jocks had this business of having to do all this hard work and whatnot, and immediately they moved to a new position. But they took it in the stride, and as I say, that there were very little grumbling at all.
What specifically do you mean by tip-top condition?
Well, the trenches in good condition, dugouts in good condition, not leaking when it rains, sandbagging, not deteriorated, and ammunition dumps not weathered, and things like that.
So there you are at the concentration area making preparations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any incidents happen there?
No, nothing in particular. No, they advanced. We had sent out a people up to the position we were going to take over. They were there, be there to guide us. Guide us in when we arrived. But there was nothing. The training was hard, and the colonel, he checked up on every one of the companies. They went through a specific types of exercises which he you know, that they went through them absolutely, and if you did well, you were told you'd done well. If you didn't do so well, then you had to rectify it. And so we soon built up them in quite a good state to get into the line in a short time.
Was there much difference between your A company and the others?
A company was a very good company. I must say that, because it was my company. But the other companies, they may have had difficulties, put it that way. And the circumstances of the probably officers who weren't as, you know, they weren't as good as what they should have been. But that was again quickly rectified.
Which officers in your company stick out in your mind? In
not a matter of, we had no officers that were staking out the company. Others did.
But were there any particularly outstanding officers?
Oh, yes, indeed, yes. My company commander was an outstanding officer, Major Irwin. He got an excellent DSO on the hook. And the second in command, again, a tremendous officer he was, and decorated from the war as well. And the rest of the officers were all young officers who hadn't been into action before, but they were very good. And I think two of the platoon commanders were national service and one regular. And I say that unfortunately we were to lose a couple of them in later days.
What about the soldiers in your company? What was their background?
We had reinforcements, and strange enough, they were all English. These were all National Service, and they should have gone to other regiments, but their regiments were moving out, and they came to us. And I must say this, that they did us tremendous. They were really excellent young men. They were excellent young men. We had other soldiers from other Highland regiments who came out with us, who had volunteered to come out. Some of them left a lot to be desired, and they had to be carefully kept in the place.
Why should that have been so?
Well, you get the sort of thing that happens, that if you get the would-be old soldier type, and there were none of them, you know, there were none of them old soldiers at all, but you get them to play that game, and they are inclined to teach to set an example to the younger ones, which is not the sort of thing that one wants when you're in such positions that the life is you're making sure that everything is all right. You don't want someone blabbing their mouth off about the whinging sort of thing, and that was quickly overcome by, I remember, one of the worst ones that we had there. There was two of them. They came from another Highland regiment. I won't say which one. But one of them was killed. And that other chap, he realised then that this could happen to anyone. Never had a moment's trouble with him after that. He kept very quiet indeed.
Was that man killed because of his own attitude?
He was killed in action, the thing was that they realised that you just can't go shouting about the place and whatnot and being a nuisance, because everybody was in the same boat. You never knew from one hour of the day to the next what might happen to you when you were on the line.
So these two had a tendency to complain?
Yes, uh-huh.
What did you think of the system of national service?
I have nothing but the... I can only say that the national service people we had were excellent. And I would never let anybody, shoot them down in any way at all. of a really first class. They're the wear out there, young lads, that they, you know, that they're thousands of miles from home and that into war and that, and they hadn't seen anything like this before, and they really did tremendously well, and everything that you wanted from them, they gave wholeheartedly. And I must say we were very proud of them, very proud of them indeed. There was the odd bodies now and again, but they were not worth speaking about, because they never did anything, I said, other than these sort of two that they caused a bit of a problem there.
Can you tell me about your own duties as Company Sergeant Major?
Company Sergeant Major, well, I mean, that's the discipline of the company, that's the main thing, really, and assisting in every possible way to the second in command of the company, and generally keeping the company in good order.
Were there any discipline problems that you had?
No, we didn't have it. If there were discipline, there might have been minor things, but there was nothing exceptional, nothing exceptional at all. I found that with a lot of the young fellows in that, when on active service, that you had to continually keep chasing them up. You know, wear your steel helmet, wear your equipment, make sure your weapon's with you the whole time, that sort of thing. And, you know, that had to be punched into them all along the line and that. And they soon got used to it. But if you allow that sort of thing, that sort of stuff to slip, then you can have problems. If you have a stand, you know, if you don't keep chasing them up, and when I say keep chasing them up with a way of not shouting at them all the time, but telling them it's for your own sake, wear your tin hat, and that, you know, just letting them know, and I say that I try to explain that they were so an imaginative in a way. And they didn't, you know, they didn't think anything about that. And then, when anything did happen, if someone was sniped or that, and then it could have been, it could have been me. And then they suddenly realised, well, I better do what the sergeant major says: wear my hat, put on my, make sure I've got the flak jacket on, and that sort of thing. And looking after the equipment and seeing it's always in good order.
What exactly were these flak jackets?
That was the kind made with a sort of panelling. They were bulletproof, all right, but they weren't as good as these modern ones. We all had them and that, and they were very good.
But were they uncomfortable to wear?
Especially in the hot weather, they were very uncomfortable, because it could be very hot there indeed. But as I say, that the a lot of them sort of took chances in that when they thought they might get away with it. But when things started to blow up, then they soon realised that it's better to be a bit uncomfortable, have the jacket round you and a bit of steel helmet on your head, sort of thing.
So what happened after you'd finished at the concentration area?
We moved up into a first position. And we had it on the way up there. We went up there and transport and that, and we had an advance party had gone ahead of us, you know, to meet us and take the platoons to the various positions. And on the way up, we passed a unit of tanks on the hillside. And as our column approached, you know, passing these tanks, suddenly one of the tanks on the hillside broke away somewhere or other and comes heading down the hill right at the column. And they luckily, you know, they run through a number of tents on the way down, and just before it hit before it got to the road, it slewed round and stopped. Otherwise, it could have been a very nasty disaster. So that and the shelling started. So that soon, you know, made us realise that we're in the line now. We're in the line. And the position there was that the front trenches of a forward platoon, they were very near the Chinese lines, and the distance was no more than about 300 or 400 yards. Of course, you had the dally in between, and a lot of wire and that sort of thing. We could look directly into the Chinese trenches, and the higher ground that was ideal for the Chinese sniping, and we had one or two casualties with that. They were actually hit in the trenches themselves. Not a question of keeping your head down, but the question of moving unnecessarily, and they were there. But this did happen. And another unfortunate thing on that position, we had a patrol went out under a sergeant who had already done the patrol in the advance party, getting to know the position, you know, the track through the wire, which is most important. You know, otherwise you don't, you know, you won't get back and you won't get out in the first place if you... And anyway, on the way back, we were notified that the sergeant had been wounded, and one man killed, and another two wounded, and they were stranded in the wire, being overlooked by the Chinese position. Only a matter of about, no more than about just over 100 yards, I would say. And anyway, the two IC in the company, myself and a couple of stretcher bearers, we went out through the wire and picked him up. Unfortunately, another one of them was wounded there. He died on the way back. But the Chinese didn't interfere at all. There was no action from them from them whatsoever, and they could have wiped them out if they'd wanted. But again, that was a serious one, and as much as the, you know, when you go on these patrols, if you, especially when you come when you're on the way back, if you lose yourself on the way back coming through the wire, it can be catastrophic. Is that proved? That we ended up with a sergeant being wounded, two killed, and another jock wounded as well, I think it was.
So the Chinese deliberately from firing?
We didn't hear anything, we didn't see anything, and this was in broad daylight early morning. When we went out. The other thing that we had to do in that area was that in the evenings, and we used to do a search of the area, you know, the company area, because of infiltrators. Because a lot of this used to went on by the Chinese, slipping through their lines, through our lines, and infiltrating in the rear. And then getting further back towards, you know, the Seoul and that sort of thing into South Korea. And this was a job where one carried out thoroughly when you were out of the line. You used to do these searches all around